So you want to talk about ways to get bad at Malifaux?
Hell yeah. Been training my whole life for this.
So I was thinking about it because we talked about like, we talked about, I think, what is the biggest reason that I feel like I get worse over time in certain ways that I got to like check myself, which is about hand stuff. But I guess before we go into like specific ones, I think what I want to, what I think is like the core cognition and what I'm talking about here is like, as you play the game more, you learn lessons that may be incorrect. And then you start to feel, I think expectations is the key word here. You start to have expectations about certain things that actually make you play incorrectly. So I think that's what I want to talk about. Like,
for sure.
How do you get bad at the game over time? And sometimes you need to just check yourself, be like, you know, I'm in this sort of thought rut because I'm like fixating on X or Y. So what do I do to like kind of reset myself, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, I mentioned it on other episodes, but I guess I'll talk about the one that is like the biggest one for me is fixation on the control hand. I feel like that is the thing that gets bigger in my head and I have to like pat it down, be like, chill. this isn't the end all be all, because I think it just comes from like, and I guess, but what I mean by that is like over time, as I've played the game more for like almost 3 years now, I've like started to value Arcane Reservoir, card draw, all these things way more than I initially did. And I think it comes from like, I think it comes from a bias where you're like, if I would have had a 13, I would have won the game, you know? You know, I only had a 12 here, he had a 13, so he cheated that in, he won the game, you know? I think those things get bigger in your head over time. Do you relate to that?
Yes, I feel like it's kind of, maybe it's like easier to say, you know, that the game came down to that, you know,
yeah.
The guy with the better card won.
Well, like it's different. It's separate from blaming flips thing, right? You know, oh, he flipped better, he won, you know. I think because it actually has like a, like, yeah. That's obviously silly because we have the same decks, you know, but the fixation on the control hand has like a concrete outcome because it results in you changing your list. It results in you like taking certain lists or valuing certain things more, valuing certain things less, you know, like if this fixation is like huge in your mind, like certain masters just kind of fall off the table in terms of viability because you're like, well, they can't just, you know, draw me 13s and have stat 7 and I could force through that thing that I didn't get to force through that last time when I lost the game. But now if I have the stat 7 and the 13, I'm going to win the game, you know, like
that. Yeah, for
sure.
That
demon on your shoulder gets a little bigger over time.
Yeah. I mean, especially certain masters, like certain crews in general perform so well, like when your hand is really well, like good.
Yeah.
Like Karai. Having the right cards in your hand is really good.
Yeah. I mentioned that on the Discord that like Karai is such a stark thing where if she has a fat hand, she's insane. And if she doesn't, she's doo doo. And like people are like, well, yeah, that's everybody, but it's not. It's definitely not. No, if I'm playing Parker, I almost want to have a shitty hand.
Cooper. Like, yeah. I feel like they don't care.
Oh, yeah. Cooper's a good point, too, because he can just throw away all his discards and then just refill his hand, you know? Then he's just got all the weeks out early. Same with Parker. I'm going to spend so much, I'm going to discard so much, and I'm going to have so much plus flips. I almost want my 13s in my deck and not in my hand, you know?
Yeah. Sometimes it depends on the crew, but, you know, the volume of cards you're flipping, I guess.
Yeah.
Whether you have, you know, yeah, like it does make a difference. If you have a more elite crew, you want those high cards in your hand. Or maybe, and then also maybe if you're going up against an elite crew, you want those high cards in your hand because, you know, if there's only certain things that you need to target, you know, you can, you can guarantee, like, you know, you can almost guarantee the most important actions when you have the cards in your hand.
Yeah, like if you're playing against Ivan and your whole plan is you're only going to give him one chance to summon because you're going to play back in the deployment zone, you really want a fucking 13 or red joker in your hand. But if you're playing as Parker and you're going to take 20 shots this turn, you want the red joker in the deck because you want it to come up on damage, you know?
Yeah.
But I think the best way to exemplify what I'm talking about here is, like, I think if you just create two example models in your head, right? So say model X has two attacks and he draws a card as like his bonus action or whatever, or he has like Ancient Pack. And then you have model Y who makes three attacks because they discard a card due to flurry. So one has an extra action, but is minus one hand. The other is one less action, but plus one hand. Like, which one do you value more in your head? And I think over time, you value the former. You value the card draw and the two attacks because you, like, you get sort of fixated on, like, well, if I have the 13, I win the game. You know what I mean? But if you do an ad absurdum there, right?
And yeah.
Make your whole list like that. He's like, oh, well, now I'm going to make it one attack and two cards, you know? You keep extending that example. You keep stretching out that trade-off, and your whole list looks like that. Well, then, now you have five actions and 25 cards, so who gives a fuck?
Yeah. Like, I feel the opposite, know. I feel like. I kind of drift the other way, personally.
Yeah?
I would rather have a worse... Like, I would... I don't know. I like the... I don't value the hand as much, but a lot of things I play, like, it's hard because especially recently, like, most of the things I play, like, revolve around like discarding cards for effects, playing Molly and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, that's different, but I still think I value, like, just a higher volume of attacks, I guess, personally.
I think I do dispositionally as well, but I think over time I've leaned less towards that. And that's the point of this thing. It's like, well, yeah. I'm maybe leaning too much towards that. You know, like, I've definitely played, like, lists. Like, I play Terra lists where I brought in Hannah just for Arcane Reservoir. And then, like, surprise, surprise, she's not worth her points a lot of times. You know what I mean? I brought in Parker and his totem just to get Arcane Reservoir in, like, a crew. You know what I mean? And that's, what is that, 21 stones?
Yeah.
So, and after that, I have to be like, okay, well, why am I, you know, like, what's going on here in my head? You know, why did I make this mistake? Or was this even a mistake? You know? So.
You definitely got to figure out, like.
There's a math there. I'm just saying.
There's definitely a math. How much is this worth? And however you determine that. And you got to make sure that you're valuing everything you're getting properly. Or you're going to get the wrong answer every time.
Because the math kind of goes wrong the other way. Like,
you can go wrong. You can go both ways.
Yeah, you can go wrong both ways. So
you don't always need the same thing in every matchup and in every game. So you can go either way. Mm-hmm.
So other than hand, are there any things that you're thinking about that you feel like you've gotten a little worse at over time?
Nothing I can, like, personally think. Like, about myself, but I can think of things that are, like, that you have to watch out for, or one will get worse.
It's not a character trait. It's, like, a tendency. Yeah.
I think it's, like, kind of dangerous to play the same thing over and over again.
I agree.
Like, whether it's not even the same master, like, but it can be, like, if you rely too much on playing the same master, it could make you worse, but also playing the same models. Like, say there's a certain pool, and there's, I'm trying to think of a good example. There's a scheme, and you're like, oh, I always bring this model or these two models into it. And I think, like, always doing that in every matchup and never trying, you know, maybe those two models are the best for that scheme in a certain matchup, and maybe there's a different, you know, combination for, you know, a different matchup, and just getting, you know, I do this, I use these two and it always works. So I'm going to keep using it over and over and over and never try anything else. I think that can make you a lot worse as a player.
Yeah. I think it's easy to get, there are like so many different kinds of ruts you can get into.
Just like getting too like comfortable with something. I guess.
I definitely think it could stunt your potential. You know, there are a lot of practice polys who are like, you know, take one crew, play it against every master in the game 20 times, and then you achieve mastery. But it's like, okay, well, mastery of what?
That's not how the game works, though.
Yeah. I mean, you've definitely achieved and you're definitely good, but you're limiting yourself always if you're like limiting the schemes you take,
the
masters you bring, the models you're willing to look at, you know?
Yeah, the game's balanced around, you know, a system where you declare your faction, then you pick your master, then you write your list, then you pick your schemes for a reason. So you should use every part of that process, you know, get the most out of it, or you're pindering yourself a lot.
Yeah, the biggest example for me was like, I, for the longest time, never took hard to kill upgrade on Midnight Stalker. It just felt inefficient. It's like my Midnight Stalker never dies. I always just, my oversimplification was just like, well, I'll just play the Midnight Stalker right and I won't get him killed. You know what I'm saying? Because he's already really hard to kill. I'm already scoring 4 points with him in certain games. It's like, why would I add 2 stones to this and weaken my position in other places on the board?
Not anymore.
But then I was like, well, and then I tried it, you know, and I'm like, oh, well, now I can take Vendetta with the Midnight Stalker. Like, I can be more, like, abusive with it because it has the demise and the hard to kill and stuff like that. And all that stuff got errated, but I'm just saying.
What did it lose? Like, it lost the demise, right?
It lost its demise.
So that takes a lot out of it. Like,
You definitely don't put the upgrade on it anymore What it gave you before was double hard to kill. You know, so... But yeah, basically I'd wrote it off in my head as being inefficient and like a noob play. But then like I tried it and I realized I can take this and, you know, push it even further if I want to. Another tool in the tool belt sort of situation.
I kind of did the same thing with, I guess in the opposite. Well, no, not in the opposite. Like I'll never take that when I was playing Dreamer, I would never take the upgrade avoid doom or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like the 2 points, so just in case I black on a summon, I would never take that. And maybe I should have tried it, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think you just have to, I don't know. That one's a tricky one because you have to think about the philosophy of what you're trying to do with the upgrade. Like you have to make this insanely answer to like a really hard question, which is like, I'm going to a GT. I'm going to play 5 rounds. I'm going to play 5 turns each round. I'm going to play 25 turns. The likelihood of me blacking on one of those is blah. If I black on how many turns does it make me lose the game? And then you have to do like a math there too. Like it's like so big. And then you have to equate that to what you're losing.
1, 2, or 3.
Yeah. You have to equate that to whatever you're losing in an AP loss because X model was 2 points cheaper because you had to save 2 points for the upgrade. So X model died on turn 4, turn 3, turn 2, and never for the other 2 rounds. So like, you know, you only lost a net 4 turns on it. You know, like it's an insanely difficult math.
All I know is it's 2 stones. And that's what, it's like a 4% tax to get your, always to guarantee your summons. What's the chance of you failing a summon?
Yeah, you could definitely call it a fixation, like the card fixation, like we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
I blacked ruined my day. So
I lost because of it. You did. Maybe you didn't lose. Maybe it's all the other shit you did.
One that I was thinking about, and I want your feedback on this, is I think over time you start to overvalue your opponent's agency in a way that like, you don't pick models and take schemes that give your opponent interaction with them in ways that can be, I think they could be taken a little too far, right? Like, you know, the biggest example would be like not taking shockwaves because, you know, just they'll just cheat the TN forehead, you know? but like shockwaves can be valuable.
Extremely.
And basically just, I think over time you undervalue anything where you can mark it off the list by saying like they'll cheat in a 13. You know what I mean? Like those situations, like it, like get a lot smaller.
Yeah. In terms of
things you consider viable.
I try to not consider the control hand at all, honestly, like when evaluating how good something is, because anything can be made better or worse by yours or your opponent's control hand. That's like all, that's like where all the, not all, that's where like a lot of like, I don't know, not even variance, because, you know, we're flipping cards, so like that's kind of, you know, you get variance there, but I guess it's more extreme. Like where you can really decide what you want and what you don't want to happen with the control hand. So
I think the general trend,
I think
of more experienced Malifaux players is to value attacks and things where if you have a 13 in your hand, they get a lot better. Like we were talking about, like with Karai versus Parker, right? I think more experience leads to valuing Karai over Parker, independent of their actual power level. I'm just saying in terms of like their play style and how important the control hand is to them. Like you could say Parker's dog shit because he really gives your opponent a fuck ton of agency, right? Like you're hitting them with 20 attacks. You only have stat five on your shit. They can choose to cheat. You know, they'll have cover on half of them. They can choose to cheat on whatever they want. And if it's important in attack, they'll cheat over it. It's like, yeah, I think you can overvalue that opponent in terms of how much they can stop.
Yeah, there's plenty of this. I mean, I'm sure I've definitely played plenty of games where my opponent is, you know, asking hard-hitting questions that I can't answer with my control hand.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're not even, you know, that hard hitting of questions, and I still can't do anything. So you got to realize your opponent can that can happen to them too. So it's a weird balance. Like when I used to play Magic, a lot of people would say, like, if you go to a big tournament, you cannot like no matter how good you are, no matter if you make every play right and do everything perfectly, if you weren't lucky and like. That's what it kind of comes down to. If you weren't lucky and you didn't draw really well that tournament, you're not going to win. Like, it's about just playing the, you know, the best you can every single match and just, you know, the rest is whatever variance or luck or whatever you want to call it, like chance. That's going to determine whether, you know, the degree of success you're going to have. But if you always make the best play and the right play, I think, you know, more often than not, you're going to find success if you're, you know, if you're just playing better. So whether you have a good control hand or you're, you know, getting your plus flips, throwing out your adversary, getting your just high volume of attacks, if you're just, you just have to be a little bit luckier, like the slightest bit and you're going to pull out ahead probably.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, like they say like, you know, skill is, like preparation plus luck or whatever, you know? So definitely in order to win a tournament, you got to get lucky in some sort of situation. It's all about like building yourself a environment where you can get lucky. You know what I mean? That's why I think it's valuable to know how to play crews and stuff like that. That just like, whoa, I flipped good. I won, you know, like that's what Parker is, you know, versus Karai, which is not that. It's the opposite of that. It's like, oh, shit.
As far as a curio, yes, but I think the crew has potential that I have yet to unlock. That where
yeah, like, but there's just so many TNs and shit, like, you know, like
yeah. Even still, I think there's just a
and a curio is such a central part of that crew that like
kind of it is, but
it's what I have to play around. I don't give a fuck about
when it's
gyro.
When it's good, it's like this is easy, like and it's obvious. It's like when it's going, like that's what you have to worry about. But I feel like there is if you fully utilize the crew, I feel like it's pretty scary. everything's pretty scary.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's an S tier crew. I think it's one of the better crews in the game right now. But yeah, it's just how it feels to play against Karai when she drew a red Joker and a 13 of mass versus her highest card is a 12 is astronomically different.
Oh yeah. Yeah, when if you have two, I mean, yeah, if you have two guaranteed, those two guaranteed onslaughts hits or whatever, and plus the onslaughts, like, that's a good place to be.
But the reason I brought up this overvaluing opponent agency, because like the failing of that I've had on it is in scheme selection, where I have typically shied away from schemes where I could see my opponent easily turning it off. In a way that I feel like is detrimental to like my ability, detrimental to my like success, you know. Basically, like the best example is claim jump.
But sometimes you can be right.
I could be right. I'm just saying,
you know,
with all of this, there's a balance, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like I've almost written claim jump completely off because in my head it's like, well, it's the most telegraphed scheme ever. So my opponent will just walk something in range, like obviously.
Yeah.
So in that way, I've sort of written it off to my own detriment. Like I should have it more in my like rotation in terms of things I'm willing to take.
Yeah.
So that's basically what I mean by like overvaluing the agency of my opponent, because you know, like they may just not think it's that telegraphed, because you know. There are reasons for model B in the center. But to me, it's always insanely telegraphed from like the player perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any others?
We kind of hit all the things.
We have a listener question. You want to do that?
Sure.
So on the Swamp Fiends Discord, if you go to the listener question section and submit an MP3 or MP4 or WAV file, whatever, anything that's downloadable through that platform, we can play it on the show. And you'll get featured. So here's the last one we got. So we got no more new ones. So if you want to ask a question, submit it, and it'll probably be on the next episode. Here we go.
Hi, Cody. Hi, Jimmy. This is Joel calling in from Illinois, the land of Lincoln. My question to both of you is, when you are starting up a new crew or keyword, what makes you pick that particular crew? Is it because you like the models, like the theme of the crew? Do you pick crews based on a playstyle you think you will like? Are you looking to build a keyword that is competitive in a very particular pool? Is it because you had a friend getting out of the game and they sold you a bunch of models, which is how I started collecting Guild? Thanks a lot. Love the show.
Thanks, Joel. a little bit of everything is unfortunately part of my answer, I guess. I definitely have a fuck ton of Bayou that I spend entirely too much time trying to get rid of because I just keep collecting it in various trades. So yeah, if you want Bayou, hit me up and I'll sell it to you for dirt cheap. I don't know. What do you think, Jimmy?
I feel like the way the game works, I feel like I'm just supposed to have everything if I'm playing a faction, I guess.
Yeah.
Like you're supposed to, like, I guess, you know, if the game, you know, every game, it's not like in War Machine where you had like your, what was it, like three lists or whatever, and you had to play them all once or something. Wasn't that like a thing in tournaments?
Yeah, right? Crafting a pair was did in War Machine.
Yeah, like you don't have that in this game, so I feel like, I guess you're at a disadvantage if you don't have everything, sort of. Sometimes.
Well, I think what his question primarily is like what
attracts me to certain things. So I would say,
how do you pick your main? Almost is, I feel like, a lot of the question.
I guess I could equate it better, like for myself, is how do I pick my faction?
Sure.
And like it's a little bit of a broader sense, and it's definitely, I don't really look at like the models, I guess, and like how they look or how cool they look or not cool they look. It's really just about how they play. I kind of just try to look at the whole faction. And that was kind of like when I first started playing and I played Neverborn, I kind of fell into like, I like the way Dreamer plays and I like the way Pandora plays. And that was like it. And Lucius was kind of cool too. And that's kind of why I shied away from them, because I felt like I didn't, like, although I thought they were like the coolest and I liked their play style a lot, I guess it wasn't like good enough because I felt like it was too narrow. So that's why I kind of changed to Rezzers, where I pretty much like the playstyle of everything, but maybe not as much as I like the playstyle of, you know, just Pandora or just Dreamer. But the viability of everything, and they're all fun to play, is what really kept me playing them. And now that's why I'm on Rezzers.
Yeah, I think
Look on playstyle. Basic. That's about it.
Yeah, I think for me, playstyle is number one as well. But it's also like a playstyle, like aesthetic, like marriage. Like, I want something that looks a certain way and plays in a way that like sort of mirrors what it like looks like. Cause I really enjoy painting and stuff like that. Like, that's why I want to get rid of the bayous. I don't enjoy painting them. And that's why I'm all in on Explorers more than anything, is I just like enjoy the sculpts. But the reason I'm like an Ivan main right now is because like when I saw the rules, I'm like, I fucking love these rules. I love this sort of like, I love this denied flank potential. I love this control potential. I love this. And all of that is married with the Ivan's ability to be like personally effective himself. And then all of that's sort of tied into an aesthetic package that I also like really like. So I think it's like a marriage between the two for me. It's definitely playstyle first, and it's like, I want like a control playstyle first. Like, what I want more than anything is when I sit down at the table, I want to be able, after my opponent moves, I want to be like, oh, well, you did that, I'll do this. You know, like I want to have like layered plan B, C, and D. And that's what I gravitate towards. And if it's strong, and if that play style is strong enough in a specific keyword, it'll pull me to an entirely different faction.
Yeah, that makes sense. You definitely do like that kind of play style. So do I. I kind of like, I can go back and forth between like a play style like that and a play style that's more, you know, this is the thing I do, I'm going to go do it, and that's about all there is to it.
Yeah, I like making trades, I guess, which is probably the more unique thing about my playstyle, I guess, is a lot of people don't like. A lot of people like control that looks more like denial, but I don't. I like making trades and setting up like future plans.
That's, yeah,
that's it. All right. So if that, let us know if that answers your question, and submit us some more questions or follow ups in the future. You got anything else to add, Jim?
I think that's it.
Ooh, later.
What are you doing in my swamp?
How you feeling about GG2 so far? You played 3 games?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Yeah. I scored scored bait and switch against Pace, and it felt pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
I picked Joss, because I knew Joss was going to come straight for my face. But on turn one, I flipped. Okay, so I summon a Brock Inspector, right, into Joss, because he's willpower 6. The Brock Inspector makes 2 attacks at the end of the turn. He flips like an 11 and a 13. And then he goes first turn 2 and flips a 13 and a 13. He flipped 3 13s in like 4 attacks. He must have missed 1 attack, because otherwise Joss would be dead. Because Joss lived on like 1 or 2 HP and then spent the game running. But luckily he came back on like turn 4. And I scored bait and switch up.
Nice. Yeah. I think, how'd you feel about that keyword into your little English Ivan?
Hoffman?
Yeah.
I like it. I think it's an engaging matchup.
I think it was a good choice.
Yeah.
I think it's a good choice. Just from looking at the cards, it felt pretty good.
We both learned a lot. He didn't know much about Ivan, so he learned, you know, a fuck ton, but.
Yeah. That's a lot I of learned stuff is to move you. Doesn't that whole keyword have a lot of heave and stuff? So like that's like the potential. There's like a lot of like.
I don't think.
I feel like that's a, maybe it's not the best. It's the options there, and it makes you have to worry about it. But also, I feel like it's very. I don't know. I feel like that like it can grind well with that, with your list.
Like yeah, one thing I learned. In that game was that if you can, what ideally you want to be able to threaten Ivan, but you don't want that to be your primary win condition. Because if he just brings the emissary, that can turn off like almost every assassination sort of plan. But what you want is a list again? That can both, it has take the hit and it's defense 7. It's just like a pain in the ass.
Oh, yeah.
So what you want is something that can threat Ivan, but is also really efficient at killing the rest of his list. Because Melissa in that matchup was like the most important model. Just because she was running around, she killed like Corvus Rook with guns, and then she killed like two summons and an operative, which was just making me way less efficient by just grinding out my like things that can actually score points for me. But then like Joss was there, you know, obviously threatened the irreducible assassination run. But what we learned is his actual like low key threat is he has a trigger to stun you. So he can just stun for that trigger twice or power token for that trigger twice. So he stuns him once, he sends it to Morgrake, he stuns him a second time, he's stunned, now he can't summon.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's a pretty interesting, like, cagey little matchup. Again, Eva was the MVP. She like went over to a turf marker. Turf marker, and just sat on it the whole game, locking away a ski marker underneath her feet.
That bitch is so annoying.
She's insane.
She's too good.
A hunter like spent two turns shooting at her on double negatives because of the concealment from lock away and then her scoundrel ability. Yeah, she's nutso.
She's definitely, it's so hard to play around
yeah.
her.
She has pretty hard questions.